The views expressed on The Final Straw Radio do not necessarily reflect those of Asheville FM, Friends of Community Radio, or any of the affiliate radio stations airing the show.
You're listening to WSFM LP 103.3 in Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I'm Bursts.
And I'm William.
Show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KWA LP in Olympia, Washington, and WCRS LP in Columbus, Ohio. The show will later be archived at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, and you can email us with questions or suggestions at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net. Also, if you're interested in rebroadcasting any episode or segment, you're free to do so, but please just send us an email so we know you're out there. If you care to, you can send us letters at The Final Straw, care of Asheville FM, 864 Haywood Road, Asheville, North Carolina, 28806.
The show is brought to you by Firestorm Books and Coffee. Located at 610 Haywood Road, Firestorm Books and Coffee is a worker-owned cooperative in Asheville, specializing in offbeat, underground, and independent literature. A partial link to Firestorm's catalog of books and zines can be found online at firestorm.coop. This week, Burst spoke with Imam Sadiq Abdullah Hassan, one of five defendants in the Lucasville Uprising case from 1993 facing the death penalty, known collectively as the Lucasville Five. Hassan, calling from Ohio State Prison Supermax in Youngstown, Ohio, took the time to talk about the newly formed Free Ohio Movement, a prison organizing movement based on the Free Alabama Movement, which centers on the claim that prisons in the U.S. are the current site of a continuation of slavery, supposedly abolished but really upheld by the 13th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. Hassan talks about prisoner labor and recidivism, claims of rehabilitation by the state, and the organizing towards the September 9th nationwide prisoner strike on the 45th anniversary of the Attica prison uprising of 1971. More on Hassan's case can be found at lucasvilleamnesty.org. And you can hear our previous interviews with Hassan by searching his name at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org.
After that, you'll hear a conversation with a member of Istanbul Anarchist Black Cross in Turkey that I conducted. The conversation talks about the political prisoner situation in Turkey, the work of IABC, the case of vegan anarchist prisoner Osman Evcan, who recently succeeded to win rights from the state after a 45-day hunger strike. More on IABC in Turkish at abcistanbul.blogspot.fr.
First, here's a few announcements. At the request of prison organizers in North Carolina, we'd like to share the following information. Politically active prisoner Stanley Corbett, number 0716025, has been repeatedly harassed by COs at Alexander CI in Taylorsville, North Carolina, and is being denied full food portions. Upon Corbett complaining, one CO said, quote, "Y'all N-words always complaining about something," end quote. Then later, after filing a grievance, a different CO yelled, quote, "Suck my bleep, N-word, write that up," end quote. Please call to the prison at area code 828-632-1331 and request the administration to feed Corbett and stop this harassment. Again, that number is 828-632-1331 and Stanley Corbett's number is 0716025, held at Alexander CI in Taylorsville, North Carolina.
Here's a brief announcement from Save Our Roots, an Indigenous Peoples campaign to protect the sacred biodiversity of our natural forests. Quote, "Genetically engineered trees pose a very real and significant threat to our natural forests and all life on Earth. It violates Indigenous peoples' fundamental rights to live in harmony with nature and to practice our cultural heritage and our cultural and spiritual beliefs. The propagation and use of GE trees as a natural resource and commodity for increased pulp and energy production will compromise and destroy the delicate regenerative biodiversity and life cycles of the Earth. The growing of GE trees is a risk towards the rights of the earth, land tenure and subsistence rights of indigenous people, depletion of precious groundwater reserves, increases the use of deadly herbicides and pesticides, continues the release of greenhouse gas emissions and microscopic pollutants, and are a false solution towards mitigating climate change. To learn more about this topic, for updates on current situations and campaigns, And for interview opportunities for our media project, you can visit saveourroots.org.
On Thursday, May 26th, 7 to 9 p.m. at Firestorm Books and Coffee, located at 610 Haywood Road, they will host the Anarchy and Anti-Fascism in the Balkans, Coco Lepo Solidarity Tour. Suggested donation is asked, but no one is turned away for lack of funds to help the presenter with travel costs. During this time, a member of Coco Lepo Autonomous Youth Solidarity Program in Belgrade, Serbia, attendees can hear from a Coco Lepo member who is visiting the U.S. on a tour to spread awareness of autonomous, anarchist, and anti-fascist, anti-racist projects and organizing going on in Belgrade and beyond. The presenter will narrate the evolution of Coco Lepo from a free kindergarten in the defunct Enix Film Squat to a broader youth program. The discussion will focus on issues of anti-Zyganism, a term for prejudice against Roma folks, autonomous solidarity efforts in Belgrade, the difference between charity and mutual aid, and the struggle against hierarchy. The presenter welcomes challenges and suggestions for continued solidarity and new connections. Coco Lepo Youth Solidarity Collective is a mutual aid program working with the residents of The Dump, a favela-type slum in Belgrade inhabited by people usually referred to as Roma or Gypsies. The collective is founded on the principles of equality and mutual aid. It is closely tied to the anarchist and anti-fascist scene in Balkans and beyond. Check it out. This is from feralfutures.wordpress.com. We are very happy to announce that for the eighth year running, the Wild Roots Feral Futures, or WRFF, Eco Defense Direct Action and Rewilding Encampment will take place in the forests of southwest Colorado this coming June 18th through 26th, 2016. Exact location TBA. WRFF is an informal, completely free, and non-commercial, and loosely organized campout operating on less than a shoestring budget, formerly entirely off of donated, scavenged, or liberated supplies, and sustained through 100% volunteer effort. Though we foster a collective community and pool resources, they also encourage general self-sufficiency, which lightens the burden on communal supplies, and which they find to be the very source and foundation of true mutual sharing and abundance. They'd like to begin by acknowledging that Wild Roots Feral Futures takes place on occupied and stolen indigenous territory, primarily of the Nuutsiu, occasionally spelled people, as well as Diné, or so-called Navajo, Apache, and others. In recognition of this reality, and as a first step in confronting it, we seek to establish provocative working relationships with those whose stolen land we gather upon, and open the space we temporarily gather in to the centering and amplification of Indigenous voices and struggles. Our understanding is that any community of resistance that doesn't center the voices of Indigenous folks and put their leadership in the forefront is a movement that is part of the problem. We'd like to invite groups and individuals engaged in struggles against the destruction of the earth, and indeed all interconnected forms of oppression, to join us and share your stories, lessons, skills, and whatever else you may have to offer. In this spirit, we would like to reach out to frontline community members, local environmental groups, coalitions, and alliances everywhere, as well as more readily recognizable groups like Earth First, Rising Tide North America, and others to come collaborate on the future of radical environmentalism and eco-defense in our bioregions and beyond. We would also like to reach out to groups like Earth First, RTNA, and the Ruckus Society, as well as other groups and individuals, in search of trainers and workshop facilitators who are willing to dedicate themselves to attending Wild Roots Feral Futures and sharing their skills and knowledge in a setting that lacks the financial infrastructure to compensate them as they may have come to expect from other more well-funded groups and events. We are specifically seeking direct action, blockade, tripod, and tree climbing and sitting trainers, as well as gear and supplies. We are currently accepting donations in the form of supplies and monetary contributions. Please email them for details at feralfutures@riseup.net.
And now the call out for this year's June 11th, International Day of Solidarity with Marius Mason and all long-term anarchist prisoners. This was published on May 2nd of 2016. For June 11th, 2015, we emphasized transition in the struggle and lives of the prisoners we support. This year, we're focusing on a different kind of transition, the restructuring of the prison system and thus doubling down on opposition to maximum security, isolation, and communications management units. High security facilities are not new. For example, communications management units isolated Daniel McGowan and Andy Stepanian for years. But now we are at a new juncture. There is both a fresh focus on the part of the authorities reorganizing prisons to maximize repression against long-term and combative prisoners, while simultaneously cutting costs. In response, there has been a new wave of repression and revolt in the streets and in the prisons. As this wave spreads organically, we feel impelled to contribute in support of our imprisoned friends and comrades. Around the world, repression intensifies against anarchists, their comrades, and their families. The left-wing Syriza government in Greece continues the isolation of rebellious prisoners in the C-type maximum security prisons. The Spanish state attempts to criminalize anarchist solidarity through, quote, anti-terrorist, unquote, spectacle of raids, arrests, and show trials. Anarchists from Santiago to Kansas City faced decades in prison for choosing a path of revolt and for their refusal to bow before pressure from the state. Everywhere we look, the state's jaws clamp down on rebellion. But all this cannot break our comrades or the spirit of our struggle. As Monica Caballero and Francisco Solar are sentenced to 12 years in prison, anarchists respond to their persecution with smoke and shattered glass. As the Greek state levels its forces against the families of the imprisoned comrades of the conspiracy cells of fire and condemns Nikos Maziotis to life in prison, fugitive comrade Paolo Raupo attempts to hijack a helicopter to free the imprisoned fighters. As Osman Evcan and Eric King both fight the state's attempt to starve them for their refusal to consume flesh, comrades mobilize to ensure that their demands are backed with acts of solidarity. As the Chilean state continues to arrest and imprison anarchists, an intransigent minority strikes back in vengeance. As the state of Ohio continues to restrict Sean Swain's communication, those holding the controls find their names and addresses spread online. As the state constructs an anti-terrorism roundup in Belgium, a multi-form struggle against prison society there continues, unflinching and defiant. As the United States prison system continues its brutal enforcement of white supremacy and the social liquidation of undesirables, prisons from Alabama to Nebraska face the flames of rebellion. Everywhere we look, the revolt against prison society deepens and spreads.
The movement towards absolute control within prisons is the state's movement towards complete so-called security. Maximum and supermax security prisons, secure housing, isolation, control, and communication management units. In Spain, FIES, in Greece, C-type. Though they go by many names, they serve the same function. These institutions are an exaggeration of the tools and logic of prisons, complete isolation in small, windowless cells for 22 to 23 hours per day, restricted phone access, few, if any, write-outs. Non-contact visits means one might not touch another person for months or years. Guards, cameras, and mail censoring maintain constant surveillance. Erratic administrations and useless grievance procedures means pervasive uncertainty, indefinite punishment, and no recourse for one's placement. Anarchist prisoner Sean Swain explains, quote, "What you are experiencing is designed to be painful, to cause debility, dependence, and dread," end quote. Greek prisoner Angeliki Spiropoulou wrote that, quote, "Prison has always been built upon submission of those who do not conform to the predefined standards of society, and domination aims at dissemination of fear," end quote. This illuminates who these prisons are designed for. Control units in the U.S. are primarily populated by Muslim so-called extremists, mostly young men entrapped by the FBI, and black and brown people labeled as gang members. There are also politically outspoken prisoners and rebellious so-called troublemakers. What they have in common is that these are the people the state does not want communicating with each other or with the outside. Subversive communication and real relationships would be a threat to security. While in the U.S., these control units are often justified by the threats of terrorist boogeymen, in other cases, the motivations are more explicit. It is clear C-type prisons in Greece were created in response to combative anarchists, guerrillas, and other rebels. While these facilities are intended to isolate and control rebellious populations, the inverse often results. Instead of dampening the fires of rebellion, high-security facilities spark powerful resistance. In 2013, 30,000 California prisoners started an indefinite hunger strike, followed by years of ongoing struggle, initiated by some prisoners confined to isolation in the maximum security Pelican Bay facility. They focused their demands on the intolerable conditions of the control unit, and their struggle contributed to minor but meaningful reforms to California procedures for solitary confinement. Isolation is now banned from federal juvenile facilities. Last year, Greek prisoners engaged in a hunger strike for 48 days against the creation of the C-type prisons, anti-terrorism laws, and forced DNA sampling, ending in renewed indications of government capitulation. And earlier this year, Fabio Dusco chose to reject the state's attempts at neutralization and to fight against the conditions of his detention. Sean Swain has seen some of the deepest and darkest parts of the ODRC, yet he still continues to fight, laughing in the face of his censors. In defiance of the state's attempt to silence and punish him, Marius continues to write and fight in defense of the earth, animals, and trans prisoners. In March at Holman Prison, Alabama DOC's notorious high-security facility, an uprising took place in which a guard and the warden were injured. Prisoners temporarily took control of some spaces, and one participant declared, quote, "There is only one way to deal with it. Tear the prison down," end quote.
Even as governments around the world institute harsher forms of control within prisons, they spread glib platitudes about prison reform, community accountability, and unmanageable size of prison populations. Prison reform has been in the air for several years now, due both to pressure from rebels and resulting bad press, as well as the economic imperative. Prisons are expensive and unwieldy, unfit for the lean, flexible new governmental and productive regime. Conservatives want to cut back spending, and the president has decided that prisons are a human interest issue. However, we know that the controlled shrinking of the prison system will not look like the liberation that some prison abolitionists dream of. Rather, it will advance a rationalization of control, cheaper, smaller prisons targeting the incorrigible, non-adaptive, and rebellious prisoners, alongside expanded surveillance and smart state intervention on the outside of the prison walls. Razor wire and guards are being replaced by GPS monitoring, strict probation requirements, soft policing, and privatized community security forces. While we can't deny our tenuous relief when daily conditions improve for those in prison, we remain deeply suspicious of these improvements. We know that the goal remains increasingly sinister social control. Even if the techniques are softened or made more palatable, we know that the measures, while improving conditions for some, simply serve to justify the heaviest repression against others. The state separates the sheep from the goats, while the reformers look on silently. This world relies on imprisonment and social control, and it is only by fighting against the world and against control in all of its forms that we might grasp moments of freedom. We are opposed to prison in all of its forms, and we remain skeptical of dividing prisoners into, quote, political, unquote, and others. June 11th, however, is a specific day of solidarity with long-term anarchist prisoners. By focusing on long-term imprisonment, we want to ensure that none of our comrades are forgotten, even if they've already been behind bars for decades. But when we speak about long-term imprisonment, we aren't making reference to specific criteria, length of sentence, or extended limbo. For us, any day that anyone spends in prison is already too long. Rather, we want to bring light to those who've been identified by the state as the most guilty and intransigent, the ones who won't be the first in line for a pardon as certain aspects of prison are phased out. Marius Mason, Marco Kamenisch, Monaco and Francisco, among others, act as reagents by which we can test various proposals for addressing the prison system. Will such and such proposal lead to their release? The reformist proposals will leave the eco-arsonists, the anti-nuclear saboteurs, and the desecrators of cathedrals inside of the prison walls, condemned to expanded maximum security units.
We have worked to spread information, inspiration, and decentralized solidarity with long-term anarchist prisoners. The existence of a diffuse network of support is vital to both durable aid to our imprisoned comrades and the growth of a subversive movement. It is deeply exciting that this network is not only diffuse but multiform, with solidarity expressing itself in many forms, from widespread efforts to fundraise and support prisoners, to efforts to link them with ongoing struggles, to combative actions that continue the fight against domination and ecological destruction. But this network can't only express itself in local forms without risking either isolation or a reliance on digital so-called communication. We want to experiment with new and flexible models of convergence and conversation in order to revitalize the struggle and enrich our discussions. As Avalanche magazine puts it in their argument for a new anti-prison coordination, quote, "This international proposal doesn't aim at the creation of some organization, but at the opening of spaces of exchange, of mutual knowledge and debate. We won't doubt this will permit a better knowledge of what is going on elsewhere, creating the conditions for interventions considered in the perspective of international solidarity and common struggle to give birth to temporary coordination between different struggles and fights, to deepen the informality out of which, according to affinities and projects, create initiatives. In this way, through the mutual knowledge of the project of struggle, this international proposal aims at stimulating organizational occasions, not with the aim of a growth in quantity, but of the quality of revolutionary intervention," end quote. For these reasons, among many others, we welcome the call for a convergence in Washington, D.C. this June 11th, combining a demonstration against the Bureau of Prisons with an occasion for discussion and sharing of ideas. We hope this will create new combinations of diffuse local action with coordinated regional and international activity. Against the attempted greenwashing of prison initiatives, we know that prisons are fundamentally toxic to human life, both the social conditions that they sustain and create, and the literal toxins that litter the site of a newly proposed maximum security prison in Letcher County, Kentucky. Once Capitol finished stripping coal from the mountaintops, the state moved in to build a prison on the ravaged landscape.
We hope that June 11th revitalizes solidarity for those comrades facing the longest sentences and builds momentum against the cages they're locked in. Recent struggles against the expansion of these cages continue to demonstrate the expansive possibilities of solidarity. In situations of prison construction, by weaving together locals, residents, and prisoners who would both be harmed by a new prison, or in the case of hunger strikes against the new C-type maximum security wings in Greece, by knitting together prisoners from different groups, outside radicals and family members. The potential of subverting the state's plan of restructuring prison opens another front in the struggle, beyond supporting individual comrades and organizing to help prison rebellions. These struggles are currently proliferating in the U.S., from the opposition to the new youth jail in Seattle or the construction of the ICE facility in Gary, Indiana, to the community fight against the maximum security facility in eastern Kentucky. Let's link these experiences together in order to strengthen ourselves, whether we're inside or outside the existing prisons. Successfully challenging the restructuring of the prisons and the existence of the maximum security and communication management units, particularly through a combined power of organizing inside and outside of the walls, is a clear step towards the power to destroy prisons and the society that requires them. The struggle against prisons must take many forms. It must be both slow and steady and fast and unpredictable. Supporting in-prison comrades requires diligence, patience, and time to grow real relationships. Our in-prison comrades remain in the struggle, and we will continue to support them and conspire with them in whatever ways we can. But we also want to relentlessly attack the infrastructure and logic of prisons, to become complicit with struggles inside and against prisons. June 11th could be many things. A fundraiser, an opportunity to spread the word and raise awareness, a chance to connect personally with long-term anarchist prisoners via letter or phone, an intervention to begin struggling determinedly against a prison construction project, an attack, a chance to find a crack in the structure of prison society and exploit it. Whether by yourself or with 100 comrades, we hope that you take action this June 11th against prisons and in solidarity with long-term anarchist prisoners. Thank you for all the solidarity you show on June 11th or any day. It means everything. And for anyone who's going to be around Asheville, just a little pre-announcement. On June 10th, the auditorium will host a punk and metal benefit concert. Bands and costs will be to be determined, with all the proceeds going to long-term anarchist and eco-prisoners, commissaries, and legal fights. There will be tabling by local groups, swag, and good times to be had by all. More info is forthcoming. Hey, listeners, be forewarned that because of poor connection to the prison, the sound quality will shift greatly during this conversation, yet another reason to abolish them. I'm speaking with Imam Sadiq Abdullah Hassan, a prisoner on death row in the Ohio State Prison in Youngstown. Hassan was an organizer who helped to bring the relatively peaceful resolution of the Lucasville prison uprising in 1993 and is currently an organizer with a newly formed Free Ohio Movement to End Prison Slavery. Thanks a lot for speaking, Hassan.
We've spoken on the show with members of the Free Alabama Movement and the Free Mississippi Movement in the past, and now I hear there's a Free Ohio Movement. Hassan, can you tell listeners about the Free Ohio Movement, about its goals and its methods?
Okay, the Free Ohio Movement was just recently established with people, family, friends, and supporters on the outside in coordination with a few prisoners on the inside. And the movement is constantly growing. Yes.
This call is originating from an Ohio correctional facility and may be recorded and monitored.
All around the country, you have people that are putting together, becoming part of the freedom movement. And like you said, you have the Free Alabama Movement, the Free Mississippi Movement, the Free Virginia Movement, the Free Georgia Movement, the Free Illinois Movement, and the movement is constantly growing. And basically what is happening is that many corporations are exploiting or taking advantage of prison cheap or free labor. And there are many other problems that's going on behind enemy lines. And it's reached a breaking point where prisoners, as well as their family members, are tired of being exploited and taken advantage of, again, by corporate America and by prison officials. So as a result, we're coming together and trying to figure out the most best and economical way of trying to eradicate the various different problems that is going on behind enemy lines. And that is the reason for why the movement is actually has been created. But if you take, for example, like in Ohio for the last 40 years, prisoners been getting the same state pay. That is the amount of money that they pay prisoners for their labor. And state pay has been the same. It has never actually went up. However, the prices keep going up. And a lot of time when the prices go up, it goes up sometime as a result of the oil prices going up. And that's what the prison authority, the commissary, with people would tell us. The reason the prices are going up in the inmate commissary is because gas has went up, inflation has been going up. But yet and still, when the gas prices drop, like they have dropped tremendously as of recent, the prices never goes back down. And the amount of money the prisoner gives is anywhere from 11 cents to like 17 to 22 cents per hour in the state of Ohio, and that's primarily the same in various different places in the country. In fact, when I was in the Georgia penal system in the 70s and early 80s, prisoners there didn't get paid anything for their labor. In fact, that is still the situation down there now. They still are not paid, and it's not just in Georgia. There are a few other states, primarily in the southern states, where prisoners actually get paid anything for their labor, and the prison authorities feel that it's all fair game because, and they have the law on their side based upon the 13 amendments to the Constitution.
This call is originating from an Ohio correctional facility and may be recorded and monitored.
The 13th Amendment to the Constitution, which legalizes or permits slavery and involuntary servitude for those who have been duly committed, convicted of committing a crime. So that is what's going on. But there's a host of problems. I just narrated one of them. So that's, in a nutshell, that's basically what's going on in the state of Ohio and around the country.
Yeah, so can you, for people that aren't on the inside and never have been, or maybe aren't close to someone who is, can you talk about the costs, like, in terms of prisoners having to pay for maybe occasionally programs or access to communication, like phone calls or food or, you know, the sort of, like, what kind of costs are there to the day-to-day living inside a prison that prisoners actually have to pay for?
Okay. Not only are the commissary prices high, prisoners also are given the opportunity to purchase of what family members, well, prisoners can either purchase from their money that family members send them or that they earn, or in most cases, family members order them food boxes, or what they call sundry boxes. And this can be ordered from places like Access, Union Supply, Walking Horse or some of the other companies that have contracts with these prisoners. And these prices are very high. And you would think that because the prison authorities are dealing business with these companies, that they would be getting wholesale prices, because the more that you purchase, seem like the prices should actually be reduced. But no, the prices are actually the same. So prisoners have to pay exorbitant prices for commissary items, as well as the items that they pay from these companies. You're talking about shoes, pajamas, undergarments, watches, fans, alarm clocks, and the list goes on and on and on. And this is the same with regards to female prisoners. So we have to pay for that. And it was just as a recent development, let's see, it's just been over 1 year ago. I remember the exact date. Let me see, April, May. It was exactly 1 year ago. We was here on a hunger strike, and during the time that we was on a hunger strike, I know the FCC stepped in and told the state of Ohio, and actually told everyone in the country, that they cannot exceed, let's say, close to $5 per call. Because here in Ohio, for me to call from where I'm at right now, I'm in a Ohio state-of-the-art supermax prison, which is called Ohio State Penitentiary, which is in Youngstown, Ohio. For me to call from Youngstown to Cleveland, which is like Cleveland, Ohio, which is like only an hour away, you would have to pay $5 for a 15-minute phone call. And that would be anyway in the state of Ohio, Cincinnati, Columbus, Akron, Ohio. It would be $5 for a 15-minute phone call. Now, if you was calling out of the state to Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, or anyway out of the state, you would have to pay anyway from $15 to $24 for a 15-minute phone call. And basically what was happening was the prison authorities was getting anyway from $15 to $20 million per year as kickback or as commissions as a result of them allowing Globaltel Link to exploit their prisoners. But finally, like I said, the FCC stepped in, and as it is now for the state of Ohio, for in-state call, anyway within the state of Ohio, it's only 80 cents per call for a 15-minute phone call, and out of state, it would only be 95 cents per call. So that is a tremendous difference. But nevertheless, it does not eradicate or erase the fact that for many, many years and decades, prisoners in the state of Ohio was always being exploited. And other states, they do not have the 80 cent and 95 cent per call. You know, some states are pushing it to the limit. If the thing says you cannot go over $4.70 per call, they at $4.69. Trying to get every penny they can out of prisoners. So this is the type of exploitation, economic exploitation that prisoners and their family have to experience.
This call is originating from an Ohio correctional facility and may be recorded and monitored.
And what is really amazing about this, or mind-boggling, if I may use that expression, is that statistics shows that when prisoners have communication with their family, friends, loved ones, and supporters on the outside, that the recidivism rate is actually cut in half. So you would think that that is what the prison authorities want, because here in Ohio, they have the name Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Correction. But the word rehabilitation is actually a myth. It is only for public consumption. Because if you was really trying to rehabilitate prisoners and once they be released back out of society, you would hope and pray that these prisoners would be a credit or an access to the community in which they come from. But when you were charging prisoners those exorbitant rates for phone calls, and there used to be a time in Ohio that they would give every prisoner in the state of Ohio, they was eligible to receive a free state letter per week. But now you only get one state letter per month. So when you look at the fact of how all these commissary prices are expensive, when the closed pop boxes and food boxes they purchase from private vendors that have contract with the state of Ohio are very expensive, when you look at the fact that their phone calls used to be expensive, and the fact that they have did away with giving prisoner one state free letter per week, now it's on one per month, it tells you that they're not trying to accommodate prisoners and trying to maintain that relationship or that closeness with their family and other supporters on the outside. So it's really it's like a catch-22. You know, they say one thing for public consumption and they put one thing on paper, but when it comes to putting it into practical application, it's a whole different ballgame. That's the easiest way to put it.
It seems to me like one of the really important and powerful things that I've been seeing out of the free movements is the connection between family and community and faith communities and political communities on the outside, reconnecting with folks on the inside and sort of speaking over or through the prison walls and organizing on the inside and the outside. You know what I mean? Can you can you talk about that, what that looks like in Ohio?
Okay. Again, we just recently started the Free Ohio Movement, where we are all reaching out to family, friends, loved ones, and supporters on the outside. And that's a very good, positive step. I'm aware of what you're talking about because I do a lot of reading, and I'm aware of the family, friends, and people in Alabama and other states that are actually working, and they are reaching out and extending their hands to prisoners. And that is a very good sign, because what seemed just like yesterday, not literally but figuratively speaking, is just yesterday, a lot of people in society, they was like, how do I put it without sounding offensive? It seemed like they was detached and desensitized.
This call is originating from an Ohio correctional facility and may be recorded and monitored.
It seems that people in society was detached and desensitized toward prisoner struggles. They was going through their own struggles. And not only that, it didn't help by mainstream media always trying to demonize prisoners, trying to put prisoners in a position as being some of the most low-down, psychological, and depressing human beings in the world, and to try to make them lose their worth. We're still human beings. And as I always try to emphasize to people, that we are prisoners, we might be prisoners, and some of us have made mistakes. Some of us are actually in prison because we did not commit a crime. We are actually innocent. But yet and still, we have the same tools, the same potentials, and the same humanity, and the same capacity for development that any other human being actually has. So the mere fact that people out in society are extending an olive branch, are extending their hands to those of us behind enemy lines, it's amazing. It's really mind-boggling. But it's long overdue, because what people in society have to understand, if the same government that is oppressing us behind enemy lines, it is the same government in corporate America that is oppressing them out there in society. If we would just take one thing, for example, just look at the labor. We're talking about prison labor, cheap prison labor. There's a thing that's called outsourcing, where you have corporations, what they do, they try to evade taxes. They don't want to pay American workers the minimum wages or livable wages, which is $15, which most people in society are asking for now. So instead of paying them what American citizens should be given to work types of certain types of jobs, what these corporations do, they do outsourcing. They send their business over to Bangladesh, Vietnam, China, because they can get cheap and free with cheap labor, and it saves them money as far as taxes is concerned. Well, when we turn that around and look at what's going on behind enemy lines within this country, you have the same thing that's going on. Because remember, again, it's the same government that is oppressing both of us. Take, for example, out in California, you have anyway from 3,800 to 4,000 firefighters who fight wildfires. And these blades can get up to 100 feet long, 100 feet high, excuse me. And these prisoners put their lives on the line to out these fires. They're trying to do a service to their community. Not on that, most of them, they're actually doing it because they, for every day you work, you get a day off for good performance and behavior. You get 2 days off. So, and prisoners are trying to regain their rightful freedom back into society so they can spend time with their family, friends, and loved ones. And this is actually what's going on. But corporations are doing outsourcing, they're doing insourcing. And when it comes to insourcing, it is prisoners just doing the free or cheap labor to benefit the rich and famous or these powerful corporations.
Okay, so Hassan, you were talking about the insourcing of firefighting jobs to folks who are incarcerated in California to fight wildfires.
Yes. A lot of times people use the prison authorities, they use the expression that these are volunteer firefighters. That's debatable. Although prisoners may be volunteering, when you're faced with two evils, there's a concept called the lesser of the two evils. So you choose the lesser of the two evils, and that's basically what is happening. Because inside the compounds where you have violent people. People are exploiting. There's no one in prison for missing Sunday school or failing to attend a mosque or failing to go to the synagogue. Prisoners are either in prison because they, because they committed crimes or because they've been falsely convicted. So these prisoners, if they have the opportunity to be inside the prison where violence are constantly going on, people are being exploited, and it's a day-to-day fight to survive inside prison. So when you're dealing with the survival of the fittest and you have the option to volunteer to become a fighter and to go what they call to one of these conservation camps, then obviously you would choose the lesser of the two evils. You don't want to be inside all this.
This call is originating from an Ohio correctional facility and may be recorded and monitored.
You don't want to be surrounded around all this madness. So you're basically going from, if we may use this expression, you're going from the field inside of the house, of going from the ghetto to becoming, excuse my expression, but being a house Negro. But it's the lesser of the two evils. So it's not like people are happy-go-luckily accepting these jobs. It's just like when during the time of slavery, when blacks was working from dawn to dusk, they did the job that was imposed upon them, not because they wanted to. They didn't have a choice. If they didn't do it, they would receive the whip. And by the same token, if prisoners don't do the job that they're supposed to do, they will be punished. They may not necessarily be whipped, but they do have nightsticks. They have PR-24. They have pepper spray. They have mace. And if you don't work, they write you up for failing to follow instructions or disobedience of direct order. They will place you in administrative segregation or place you in disciplinary isolation. And what that do is that prolong your stay in prison. So, again, when you're given the lesser of the two evils, yes, people will choose to become a quote-unquote a voluntary fighter. But, yes, so, again, as we were saying, you have anywhere from 3,800 to 4,000 firefighters that are working in these, fighting these serious blaze. And what's really amazing or mind-boggling, and we're not just talking about firefighters. I mean, this can be applied all the way across the board. Prisons can work in sign shops, shoe shops, sheet metal shops, and do various different types of jobs that's benefiting various different corporations. And they label it's good, why it's cheap, or why it's free. But yet and still, when these same prisoners who haven't changed, who know the job, can do it very efficiently, now that they are being released back out into society, if they apply for one of the same jobs that they held while they were in prison, they would not be hired because they have to fill out the box saying that they were ex-felon or they've been to prison, and their potential employee would not employ them. But my position is this. If it's good for the goose, then it should most definitely be good for the gander. If they can work behind enemy lines for free or cheap labor, then those same incorporations, if they really have prisoners' interests at heart, then they should be more than happy to employ these prisoners upon their release back on society. But that's not the case.
An interesting thing that's come up over the last few years has been the Industrial Workers of the World, or the IWW, labor union trying to organize with prisoners through this new creation they have called the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee. And I know that has been announced to be a useful tool for prisoners in Texas during the recent work stoppages in the month of April. Is there much in the nascent form of the Free Ohio Movement? Have you seen much engagement with the IWOC or the IWW or other labor unions around issues of unpaid or underpaid labor?
Yes and no. Again, I want to emphasize that the Free Ohio Movement is a recent movement, and we are patterning ourselves off of the other movements because we are one in the same. We're just in various different states. But yes, we do have communication with the Workers Organizing Committee in New York as well as in Missouri. And we are working with them, and they're being very supportive in helping us to trying to change the quality of life for prisoners. Because I firmly believe that if the quality of life was better for prisoners would actually be better people. If you treat a person as a dog or animal, then obviously they're going to respond as such, because there's a thing called conditional response. You put people in a position where they will respond a certain way. And the way you treat people, you are actually inducing prisoners to actually fail when they get back out in society. And it's called job security. The more people that keep coming back to prisoners, the more prison authorities and prison officials they're going to have jobs. So when you look at what's going on, I guess you can call it the recession-proof industry. That's what the prison industrial complex should be called. Again, the recession-proof industry, because it's never going away unless we take a stance and try to bring about true revolutionary changes.
We are speaking with Imam Sadiq Abdullah Hassan, one of the Lucasville Five prisoners and an organizer of the newly formed Free Ohio Movement. The FOM, modeled on the Free Alabama Movement, is joining across states to organize prisoners against foul conditions, poor food quality, unpaid and barely paid labor, lack of access to family and loved ones on the outside, high costs of incarceration, and more.
I think it's very important that people understand, again, there's no one in prison for missing Sunday school. I understand that people in prison for committing very violent crimes and that people need to be punished or disciplined in some shape, form, or fashion. But the amount of time that America is actually giving out, it's because they're trying to maintain a certain status quo, keeping a certain amount of prison, because prison is big bucks for a corporation. But I firmly believe that the quality of life was changed. If they was really concerned about trying to rehabilitate prisoners or trying to have prisoners to maintain that connecting relationship between their families and friends and supporters on the outside community, then they would do more to actually help prisoners. And give you one example. Take, for example, I remember reading a book called The Prisoner's Wife. It was about a guy in New York by the name of Rashid, and he had been getting married in prison to this woman, and they allowed conjugal visits. And I noticed that in the process of having conjugal visits, prisoners stay out of trouble. They look forward to maintaining that connecting relationship between themselves and their marriage or spouse. And not only that, when you're talking about if they was truly geared towards helping family ties and helping wives to maintain relationships with their spouse or their children, one of the ways of doing that is by allowing them to have conjugal visits. Another thing with regards to conjugal visits, it would help control the violence in the institution, because what prisoners would not, if they was married, try to avoid trouble. So he would be able to get that conjugal visit with his spouse and to maintain that relationship for 2 or 3 days over the weekend, to being able to spend time with their spouse, to being able to spend time with their children. And the last thing I would say, it would not only would it help control the violence, it would help control the race. So I think it's very important that with the freedom movement that we have created, that we are creating across the country, that we stay focused and ask the people in society to help us to make the quality of life not only better for prisoners, but helping those who made a bad mistake in life to maintain a positive relationship with their family, friends, loved ones, and the community in which they come from.
So the 45th anniversary of the Attica prison uprising approaches on September 9th as a significant date for this growing anti-prison movement. Can you talk about what's being called for and how prisoners view the tragedy of Attica in this light?
That's a very touching situation. Attica, it has a significance in almost all prisoner lives. The one lives that may not have a significance is those prisoners who are not conscious. But for those of us who are conscious, for those of us who are revolutionaries, who are trying to bring about positive and meaningful change for those of us behind enemy lines, it has a significance in our lives. And yes, this September the 9th, which would be the 45th anniversary of the Attica uprising, where prisoners came on and demanded that they be treated as human beings, that they be treated as men, that they were fed up with the gross miscarriages of injustice. In the lives of true revolutionaries, not talking about armchair revolutionaries, there are many people who theorize about revolution, about significant change, positive change, without the benefit of actually being engaged in a revolutionary movement. But for those of us who have some skin in the game, who have put our lives on the lines to try to bring about positive change behind enemy lines, we understand the significance of that date. And I noticed from the last 4 years, various different groups
This call is originating from an Ohio correctional facility and may be recorded and monitored.
Put aside one day, a 24-hour period to fast, to not be engaged in hostilities among various different factions and various different groups, and to spend that time educating themselves of being engaged in positive activities. That one has been going on for 4 years, but it has reached the point now where prisoners are basically saying enough is enough. The reason that prisoners are given these extended sentences that they're actually given is because of their free labor. The reason that they're being treated is because corporations are actually benefiting from their labor, and the government is actually benefiting from it too. So as a result, people have tried writing informal complaints. They have tried writing grievances to the prison authorities. And when they have been denied or the problem hasn't been resolved to their satisfaction, they have filed a complaint to the chief inspector, which is in the capital of their respective states, and they still have not gotten the matter resolved. People have been on hunger strike. People have destroyed and vandalized state property. People have did almost everything. They have did almost everything except throwing the kitchen sink. So it has reached the point now where prisoners say, what is the most effective way that we can stop this economic exploitation, this income inequality as it relates to prisoners behind enemy, people behind enemy lines? And the question is, we hit them actually where it hurt. So there has been a call for September the 9th, the 45th anniversary of the Attica uprising, that prisoners are saying basically, we're not talking about for a 24-hour period. Prisoners are talking about laying down and refusing to work, refusing to participate, of refusing to contribute it to their own exploitation, to their own tyranny. And God willing, we would actually succeed.
So for folks that are on the outside who might want to participate or somehow offer support to folks that are organizing inside the prison walls, what would you suggest? How would you suggest they get involved?
First, I would perhaps suggest they go to the FreeAlabamaMovement.com. They should also go to the website SupportPrisonerResistance.org. And I can't remember by heart the IWOC website.
This call is originating from an Ohio correctional facility and may be recorded and monitored.
Don't know by heart the IWOC website by heart, but if they go to the two websites that I just narrated it, I'm sure there will be a link to the other website. So that's one of the things they can do, is keep up-to-date information as to what's going on, what's being developed. But another thing they can actually do is extend a hand to prisoners and help prisoners and their family and friends and supporters on the outside to help get the message out. One of the ways that can be done is trying to make arrangements for prisoners to call in on radio programs that would host them and get a better understanding about what's going on behind enemy lines and what corporate America and prison authorities are doing to exploit prisoners and not being geared toward rehabilitating them. Because the more programs that we actually speak on, prisoners can get, people in society can get a better understanding of how people in America is actually being exploited, citizens of this country. Another way, if they can talk to people in print publication who are willing to interview prisoners over the phone and talk to them, and talking to their family so they can get a clear understanding about what's going on, those things will actually be helpful. And then the company that they have chosen to boycott, we ask some people on outside to boycott McDonald's. We asking in corporations and colleges, campuses, universities to divest in corporations that feed on prison laborers. So these are some of the things that people can actually do. So in due time, there would be flyers and information being circulated with regards to McDonald's, how they are actually exploiting people and this economic exploitation phenomenon that's going on rampant throughout this country. And once they get this information, a date will be chosen for those on the outside where they can go to certain prisons within a state. So we're saying this. We're not saying that prisoners should be let loose. We're saying the quality of life should change. Prisoners should be able to make some decent pay so they can send that money to their family, friends on the outside. They can help take care of their children. because even when they get out of prison, they are faced with an embarrassing situation of paying for restitution. Hell, they've been working for someone free all throughout their incarceration. If they was being paid minimum wages of what they're supposed to be paying, they can pay the restitution of the court costs that they actually owe. So if you let a person out of prison, give him an outfit to wear and a small check for $75, anyway from $35 to $75, what a person going to do with $35 to $75? But if he or she was being paid for their labor, then they can take their money and pay off the restitution or court costs they owe. They can pay their child support, and they can actually send money home to be of assistance to their family. But that's not what the prison authority want. It's nothing but greed, more greed, and excessive greed. And again, basically what it has come to a head where prisoners, their families, and others are saying enough is enough. The same government that oppressing those guys and gals behind enemy lines, it is the same government that oppressing us out in society. Let's join forces and let's deal with this beast once and for all, when the quality of life would not just be beneficial to the 1% of the rich people in this country who control over 40% of the wealth. Let's establish true income equality in this country. As Bernie Sanders would say, it's time for a political revolution, and God willing, that is what is forthcoming.
All right, Hassan, thanks so much for chatting, and thanks so much for your patience with the phone call situation. Really appreciate
it. No, that's no problem. Patience comes from God Almighty, and haste comes from the devil. It was nice talking to you, though, man. God willing, what I said will be of some assistance.
I'm sure it will, definitely.
We've been speaking with Imam Sadiq Abdullah Hassan, a prisoner on death row in Ohio State Prison in Youngstown. Check out supportprisonerresistance.noblogs.org to keep up on developments towards and beyond the September 9th nationwide prisoner strike. What we'll be presenting here is a conversation with a member of Istanbul Anarchist Black Cross. In the interest of protecting the anonymity of the activist, we've transcribed and re-recorded the conversation. In this conversation, listeners will hear some of the recent developments and spreading of anarchist ideas inside and outside of prisons in Turkey, the role played by IABC, and in particular on the case of Osman Efcan. Osman Efcan is an anti-civ vegan anarchist prisoner currently held near to Istanbul at Kocaeli Prison. He's been incarcerated for some 36 years, and at the time of this interview, near the end of March in 2016, Osman was into a hunger strike against a lack of vegan food and vitamins in his commissary, cameras in his cell, and more. More on the work in mostly Turkish can be found at abcistanbul.blogspot.com.
So, ABC was founded last September, September 2015, and we thought that it's there are not many anarchist prisoners in Turkey for now, but we thought that when there's a kind of thing like ABC that exists, it gives power to the people, so that when people go to demonstrations, that there will be someone who will back you up. And also, not just the lawyer's work, but just the feeling that there's this one group that's protecting you when something happens to you, so you're not alone in the hands of the state, but actually have people supporting you. And there's another thing. The communists and social groups are really strong in Turkey, so there's many socialist and communist prisoners inside of Turkey. So we also thought that some of these people are really sick of the hierarchic structure in their organizations. They're oppressed by the government, and they're oppressed by their own organizations inside of prisons. We thought that if we would be able to reach these people, we could organize more people to the anarchist ideas. also the ones inside the prisons, because it's quite important that maybe there would be an uprising inside of prisons. This is quite important, what is going on inside of prisons. So for now, we have Osman Evcen that we're supporting. Like I said, there's not many anarchist prisoners inside Turkish prisons at the moment. And all of the anarchist prisoners inside prisons are not inside because of their anarchist political activities. But they were inside before, because they were in some other communist group, but they became anarchist inside of prison. So Osman is like this also. Osman is now in prison for a total of 36 years. He's been inside and out, but this last time he's been in for 22 years. In total, there's 36 years. In 2011, Osman was on hunger strike for 42 days because he was not allowed to get vegan or vegetarian food in prisons. After 42 days, the prison changed their rules and said you can also get vegan and vegetarian food in prison because of his hunger strike. But he took this one step further. He said, "It's not enough that I can get vegan food in prison, but I must be able to get good vegan food so that I can stay healthy in prison. So if you won't sell it in prison, it has to be okay that I can receive packages from outside." So he was on hunger strike for this, and then he got it. Then they took it back again. They wouldn't give him the packages, so he resumed his hunger strike again, which ended last December, I think. Because he was resisting, hunger striking all the time, they transferred him to another prison. And this isn't the first time this has happened to Osman. It's happened 5, 6, 7 or so times to Osman. He always gets transferred to other prisons, so they do it accordingly. They put you in prison close to your family. Then, as punishment, they move you further from friends and further from your family. So this time they did this, but this time they put him in prison, not with the political prisoners. They put him in prison with the drug dealers, the robbers, the...
The social prisoners are often called?
Yes, yes. This means that because in other prisons where the political prisoners are, some stuff works differently because of the long-term resistance. So if everyone breaks the cameras in the cells every day, then they don't put any more cameras. It's because of the political prisoners inside this prison. But if they put you in a prison with the social prisoners, there is everything because there is no resistance. So he went there, and there is this camera in his cell, and he broke the camera. Then they gave him this punishment that they call cell punishment. They put you in a dark room.
In English, they frequently call this solitary confinement or segregation.
Mm-hmm. So he got this punishment, and then he broke it again. They fixed the camera, and he broke it again. Or he's changing the view of the camera so that it looks at the wall, so they can't see him. So he got this punishment 5 times now. If you have it 3 times, you get a 6-year extension to your sentence. Also, for example, in this prison, there is not enough stuff in the canteen. In the last prison, they put the vegan food in the canteen because Osman resisted for years, but in this one, there is nothing, and he can't receive food packages.
So not enough food and not enough vitamins for him?
No, nothing. And there are the cameras and other stuff. They don't send his letters outside anymore because they say it's communication between terrorists. But he's just trying to say things like, "I'm on hunger strike." This is the only thing that he writes, but it's not allowed. So they block his communication with the outside, and he's totally alone in there with no political people. So for the moment, prison authorities are taking a step back. But Osman also says that he's not taking a step back. He says it's not about the vegan food anymore. He says, what's the word?
Is it like saying they haven't crushed me?
No, surrendering. He says this is about surrendering or not, and he says, "I'm not surrendering. I'm not going to bend down on my knees in front of the government. This is a war like this. It's not about the vegan food this time. It's to show them. Because if I'm not on hunger strike, which is my only option in the prison to show them that I'm not surrendering, if I don't do this now, they'll come more hard next time. This is the only option because I'm in prison. If I don't show them now that I'm not accepting the rules." So that's why he's on hunger strike, he says. "I will not go to the end until they accept everything." He says, He says, I will go to the end until they accept everything. The vegan food, no cameras, more newspapers, political newspapers, to be allowed in prison.
Does Turkey say that they have political prisoners? Does the state acknowledge the status?
No. They say, when we went to the prison, we tried to explain to the authorities that this is for the social prisoners, so he shouldn't be here, actually, because he's a political prisoner. They said, there is no such thing as political prisoners. There are terrorists. This prison is for terrorists. Actually, he has one more cell punishment. The authorities yelled at Osman, you are a terrorist. And Osman responded, I'm not a terrorist. The government, the state is the terrorist. So he got 2 or 3 days in this also.
In the solitary confinement?
Yes, yes.
Does he have a release date?
His release date is 2022, but I think he will stay longer because of these punishments. 6 years longer. In Turkey, he has a lifetime sentence. But the difference is, I think in the United States, if you have a lifetime sentence, you stay for a lifetime.
Sometimes.
But in Turkey, if you have a lifetime sentence, it's actually 36 years. If you don't make any problems inside, you stay for 30. He would have had 30 years, but with all of these punishments for making problems inside, he will stay for all of his sentence.
Do you think the authorities were force-feed?
I don't know, because they will wait until the end, if they force-feed, usually. Also, Osman is quite old. He was born in 1959, and if you consider the fact that he was in prison for 36 years, his health is not so good.
So if he's 57 years old or so, and he's been in for 36 years, he went in around 21 years old?
I think he went in before. He went in and out in the beginning, but this time he's in for more than 20 years. So usually they'll wait until your health is bad. It's like around the 40th day of hunger strike. They wait to see if you will take a step back because you're about to die. It's the 31st day, so I think they will wait a week and then we'll see if they're taking a step back. But for now, they're not taking a step back. Actually, they changed the menu and said to him, look, see, we have mushrooms. We have good food. Ah, the cameras. What can we do? We didn't build a prison. I'm just a working person here in this prison also. The cameras were here before me, so I cannot touch them. It's the law.
So there was a demonstration in Karakoy, a neighborhood in Istanbul, the other day, and also letter writing that happens, right?
Yes, yes. The letter writing we do the last Saturday of every month, but this time we changed the time, especially for Osman and his last... and his last hunger strike, there were also many demonstrations. And last time we went in front of the prisons. This time we're waiting a little bit, and as we grow to 40 days, we're going towards stronger demonstrations.
It's hard.
It's hard, yes. Also, it's his comrades on the outside, so it's his only option, no? Because they blocked every communication for him. So it's all about what we're doing on the outside for him. It's about how long he can resist with his hunger strike, but also what we're doing. Here is one of Osman's writings against civilization.
So he's a green anarchist?
Yeah, so he wrote a 22-page letter. It's talking about animal liberation, patriarchy, heterosexism, civilization, imperialism, industrial systems, climate change, and ecological destruction.
Has anyone translated this stuff into English, do you know?
No. Maybe we can translate it, though, when we have more time.
There's never enough time. If people are listening internationally, what would you suggest that they do to offer solidarity to Osman?
More actions. More demonstrations. For the Turkish government, for now, any kind of resistance or any kind of action doesn't mean anything to them, and they block everything anyway.
So it's not even embarrassing enough for them to consider stopping if it's shown that they have political prisoners? Not that the U.S. doesn't have political prisoners. They have lots. Well, I guess Turkey just got the deal with Europe around the refugee situation, so maybe there isn't this leverage? I mean, I'm just thinking that in terms of the state, it usually doesn't act unless there's pressure from the outside that makes them more endangered or embarrassed.
The state tradition in Turkey is not like this. They don't care. There is this government in Turkey, and to protect the state, they would do anything possible. Destroying people in the prisons, torturing people, civilians or not civilians. So this is how the Turkish government works. But they do everything openly. Like with this Islamic fascism, now they do everything more openly. Everyone knows. Everyone knows they're supporting ISIS, and they don't do anything. Turkey doesn't care. There is a civil war in this country, so everyone is concentrated on this civil war. Orthodox Marxists and most of the left view things like Osman's resistance as a sort of a luxury. Resistance from inside of Turkey will have more effect for the Turkish government than resistance from outside, because the state wants to control everything, so like when you will die. If you die in their hands, this is a really bad thing. You will do something on your own. You decide when you want to die, but this is not allowed. They want him to stop, not because they care about him and want him to be healthy and to live. It's also really funny, like when they were talking with the prison guy when we were trying to bring this box of food, the prison guy said, "We can't let you bring in this box because what if you put poison inside and poison this guy?" They always think that the danger would come from outside and that they are the only ones who can do that stuff.
Changing subjects, has ABC been able to act as an anti-repression group in terms of arrests? You mentioned the importance of having someone on the outside doing support work. Has ABC been tested in that way, offering legal support?
Legal support, yes. ABC has its own lawyers, and Osman's lawyer is an ABC lawyer.
Thanks a lot for talking about what you do. Postscript. On April 6th, it was announced that Osman Evcan's hunger strike had succeeded against the Turkish state. According to the IABC's press statement on it, the state ceded to all of his demands from that statement.
Osman Evcan ended his indefinite hunger strike, which took 45 days against intimidation, torture, and extermination politics against prisoners. And again, he proves us that how he is right about his call to raise the struggle. He continued his resistance resolutely by choosing to die with honor, and this is the only reason why his demands are accepted. The state's punishment system and their officials that made Comrade Osman Evcan suffer hunger for 45 days and tortured him are our enemies. They recognize demands of Osman Evcan. The recognized demands of Osman Evcan are not a matter of grace. Instead, that is the end of the torturous practices. Torture is a state policy.
More from Istanbul ABC can be found on social media sites, including Fedbook. More about the organizing that Istanbul Anarchist Black Cross is doing, the wider situation in Turkey, and the case of Evcan Osman can be found at abcistanbul.blogspot.fr. You're listening to WSFM LP 103.3 in Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I'm Bursts.
And I'm William.
Show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KWA LP in Olympia, Washington, and WCRS LP in Columbus, Ohio. The show will later be archived at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, and you can email us with questions or suggestions at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net. Also, if you're interested in rebroadcasting any episode or segment, you're free to do so, but please just send us an email so we know you're out there. If you care to, you can send us letters at The Final Straw, care of Asheville FM, 864 Haywood Road, Asheville, North Carolina, 28806.